you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
We are back. This is The Thing About Cars, and around the table, we've got a short stack. Am I allowed to say that about us? Does the same sort of terminology apply? A short stack? Why am I thinking of these things? We've got Dawn.
Thank you. Sorry.
She's laughing at the short stack idea. And then Misty, who's also
cracking. No, I'm just laughing at our entry. It's like, let's go. Let's do this.
Let's just do this. And I'm landing on
right
short stack
blocks.
For some
let's
reason.
Let's do this.
Dawn, I'm Misty.
I am actually short.
Yes, and sweet, and Ben, who's short, and who's not short, but is very sweet.
Well, I mean, I've been called obnoxiously tall, so.
So it's just the four of us today. It's going to be a short episode for us. So first of all, Ben, I've got a quick joke for you.
Oh, boy.
What has five seats in the front, seven seats in the middle, and five seats in the back?
Five in the front, seven in the middle, and five in the back. This is something haiku related, I can tell.
It's the haiku-baru.
No!
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm striking out 0-2 so far.
Oh, mio mayo. Jambalayo. Oh, jeez.
You're hurting my brain here.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It's okay. It needs to be challenged. And that's okay. Because I was actually considering when you introduced us and you said my name, I was going to be lotusly devoted to you, but I didn't.
Would have been very nice.
Yeah. But I went with the short track that we were on.
Yes. Yes. So I'm pulling up some notes here. I found this chart that is the best selling vehicles in the United States, and it's subdivided by state. And what do you guys think is the best-selling vehicle in the U.S.? And I'm going to tell you the data source here in a second. I believe the data source is Edmunds 2020, based on the actual number of vehicles sold. Take a stab, anybody. What's the best-selling vehicle?
Oh, I'm going for the Dodge Charger, the Dodge Challenger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Misty, what do you think?
I'm going to have to go with Dawn because I have no idea. Unless it would be like the Versa, which is what I see a lot at rental cars.
Right. Ben, what do you think?
Ford F-150.
Bingo. Ben nails it, just knocks it right out of the park. So the Ford F-150, if you guys can see this, I'm going to share my screen. And we'll try to put this chart up online when we start talking about, you know, when this episode airs, we're going to try this stuff online. But the Ford F-150 outpaces the Dodge Ram, which is the second best-selling vehicle in the United States. Where is the, I don't think that the Charger or the Challenger are even on the best-selling
list. No, they're not. They're all road trip kind of cars. I mean, yeah. Well, or work. I mean, I consider the Rams, the F-150s, and the Silverados working vehicles. Like, you know, you have working dogs.
Yep.
They're working vehicles. They're family. They're hauling stuff. And yeah, I don't even see them on here.
Exactly. These are fleet vehicles, right? So I wonder if you take the fleet element out of this list, what would remain? I'm kind of curious.
Maybe. Well, look at that Honda CRV. It comes in, what, fifth?
Yes.
All of those big vehicles.
Right.
Go
ahead, Ben.
I do see a lot of non-fleet full-size pickups driving around, though. They are very popular with just regular folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The F-150, I should have thought of that. But I was thinking cars, not trucks.
And the F-150 has been in the top three for something like 30 or 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. But who wants to make a comment on Florida's top car is the Toyota Corolla?
It's in the top 10.
I know, but it's not a... Like, okay, the Toyota Corolla.
Just ekes out the Honda Civic. But, you know, these are EconoBox vehicles. These are the things that, you know, you can easily afford and in some cases easily modify, right? You don't buy an expensive car in order to drop cheap rims on it. You buy a cheap car in order to put cheap rims on it. And anyway, you know, that kind of thing. So the EconoBox vehicles is the everyday driver for a ton of people.
This is an interesting list. I don't, except for the Fords, you know, except for our SUVs and trucks, I don't see any other American cars on here. You know, you got your Ford, your Dodge, and they're all the trucks and the SUVs.
Yep.
There's not a single American
Ford Escape. Car.
Okay, I finally see a Ford Escape way down there.
Yeah, but Dodge is nowhere on the list. Dodge Chrysler is nowhere on the list.
Nope. Buick's nowhere on the list.
Buick's nowhere on the list. Yeah, it's just kind of, it makes you think though, right? It's like how much volume is being moved in the name of these major names when, anyway.
Well, and also look at the number. So down at the end there, after the Hyundai Elantra, that car is, it looks like about 75,000 in 2020. Yeah. So only 70, that's like the list goes from 75,000 up to the Ford 150 at little over 350,000.
Right. It's like five times as much. Yeah.
Who is these other cars? They're just, I mean, they're not selling.
Well, I mean, I don't know. We don't know what their profitability margins are or anything like that, but this is just the tip of the thing, right? We don't know where the other ones stack up in their actual business
model. Well, it just makes me think, think about this. There's 50 states.
Yeah.
50,000 cars or less. So that means every state would be about 100 cars in that category. I mean, I'm doing the math wrong here. It just fascinates me. Like,
yeah,
what's, is this just 2020 people? Well, this is 2020. People,
and there are so many variables in there, too, because remember, not every state is alike.
Right. I mean, let's look at the actual map itself. Florida, the only Toyota. Florida's got the Toyota Corolla listed as their bestseller. The RAV4 is big in the Pacific Northwest and in Massachusetts and in Delaware, apparently. Is that Delaware or is that? I can't do math anymore. Anyway, or my geography sucks.
Maryland.
Thank you.
Maryland.
And Delaware, yeah. Maryland too, actually, from the looks of it.
Yep, exactly.
And Rhode Island.
Right. So Honda's big in California. Honda CR-V, that is in California, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And everywhere else in the country is like a sea of Ford F-150s. And then Dodge, for some reason, is big. The Dodge Ram is pretty big out west in like three states. I don't know. How do you explain? Maybe there is no explanation. Maybe it's just random chance. But how do you explain geographic variability on these things? Or just a lot of people in Toyota, a lot of people in Florida simply like the Corolla, I guess.
Well, notice the trucks are big everywhere between about Indiana and the West Coast.
Yeah.
Now, some of those states are pretty sparsely populated. Some of them do have large farm populations. But then, of course, these trucks are also big in the Southeast, where I think it's more of a just kind of a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I was wrong about that number. It's 1,000 per few, 50,000. So,
yeah.
But, you know, it just makes me think you go past car dealerships right now and their lots are empty.
Yep.
I mean, they just don't have a lot of
inventory. I would be curious to see a per capita examination, and I would be curious to see how 2021 figures stack up against 2020 figures.
Or 2019. Yeah. I would also like to see what 2019 had.
Yeah.
These infographs are always fascinating because they... I don't know. I love infographs, but I hate them. It's like it's love hate.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll contact the person who made this one or shared this one and see if they can get their hands on data for the other years and maybe even invite them on the show if I can. I don't know if I can get to the actual creator, but it'd be cool if we can. In Hawaii, the Toyota Tacoma is the best.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I was going to say, why the Tacoma? And I've been to Hawaii and I'm thinking,
very strange.
And plus, too, remember, these are just the new cars.
Yeah, just the new cars. That's right. Everywhere, there is still a lot of farming going on. There's a lot of rural farming activity happening around Georgia, at least. I can't speak for the other states, but but anywhere there's either industry or farming going on, there's going to be a need for trucks. And
who's got the truck now with the tailgate that falls down like you're walking to a stadium? Like it's got steps and it's got a speaker system and it's got a wet bar.
I believe that's GMC.
Okay.
And I saw some discussion recently where somebody said something like, for the price of the built-in sound system in the tailgate, you could actually save a lot of money and just put a really nice boombox on the tailgate. Because it is a very expensive option, apparently. And then another person, a friend of mine, chimed in and said that he's got a Honda Ridgeline, which is not only a really nice truck, but has speakers built into the bed instead of the tailgate. I presume the bed walls. He says it's really the perfect tailgating vehicle.
Well, that makes more sense having the speakers built into the wall, because then you get a little more amplification without having to...
Yeah, and they never get banged around from the tailgate going up and down.
Or when you drop your IKEA flat pack on it.
Yeah, that too.
So if we could customize the perfect tailgating vehicle, what would it look like? What would the features be?
Well, I we take our GL450 to tailgates. And one of the things I love is the way that it's so high that the lift gate comes up. You can get underneath it and you can, you know, have all your stuff out. And you're not, and if it's, I like that little porch kind of effect with my tailgate. You do have to have a lot of plug-in stuff in the back, which ours does have. You can plug in a cigarette lighter and put your whatever electronic items you might need. I think you need a place for a nap.
So I would. Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Oh, I think I got everybody beat. Yeah. Take a small box truck or a Sprinter van.
Oh.
And then install in it a complete floor that has everything you need, the grill, the comfy chair, the big TV, everything you need set up on this floor, which is then on a hydraulic rig that will slide out and lower to ground level.
I actually saw something similar like that at tailgate, but it was a motorhome that the first half was your kitchen living quarters. And the second half was this big box that had a porch, and everything inside of it was tailgating stuff.
Yep.
Everything.
That'd be easy to do because they already make some for little RVs that have little motorcycle garages in the back. Mm-hmm. You could adapt that really easily.
Well, I think that's what it was. I think somebody had modified it.
My idea is similar to Ben's, but a little more lowbrow. Instead of making it all hydraulically ejectable from the van, I was thinking just get a food truck with a bunch of cafe setups, right? Little tables and chairs that you manually set up around the food truck. And then the window for the food truck itself folded up, and that became the television, right? So so that the window itself was the television, and you just locked into place above the window where now from inside the van, you're serving all your food and your drink. That's the refreshment central part of the entire setup. But
tell you what, though, for what some of these people spend on some of this stuff, because I'm not a big sports fan, but one time in the line of duty, believe it or not, I found myself in the massive tailgating area at a Dallas Cowboys game.
Wow.
And some of the stuff people did, they went so far and spent so much on these tailgating setups. They could have probably just got season tickets in the actual stadium. But I mean, some of this stuff was extreme. There were some big TVs out there, some trailer hitch mounted grills.
Satellite feeds from Dish. Yeah. They had their own, they brought their own satellite dish.
They bring out a little tent the size of a phone booth with a portable toilet in it.
Yes.
I mean, all kinds of things. Lazy boy recliners.
I wouldn't be interested in this for football purposes and I probably am pissing off some of our audience by saying this, but I've never really cared about ball that much, right?
Me either.
I've played sports. I've done the college thing, and I just don't have any team allegiances anymore. However, if we did this for racing, I might change my mind.
See, there you go.
Well, they do it for racing. Have you ever been in an infield? It's pretty incredible. Yeah. I mean, I've tailgated in an infield. It's pretty fun. But the hard part about that is you can't, that's the other thing. You have to then have something where you now have, you get up to the top of your RV and you put all your stuff up there so you can see the race.
Yeah.
And usually you can only see the banking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's also fun is at a lot of road course tracks, places like Road Atlanta, for instance, you can camp there for the whole race weekend. Mm-hmm. And I've heard stories about some of these, Road Atlanta campouts, a lot of partying and good times going on.
It definitely has a very festival atmosphere to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's maybe why the F-150, it's a working vehicle. It's the party vehicle. Is the F-150 the one that has, is it four doors or just two doors?
Either way, I think you can
get it both ways. Yeah.
You can haul your family around in it, grocery shop.
But if someone handed me a chunk of cash and said, Mickey, go buy a full size truck, I'm not sure I would pick the Ford. I think I might pick the Chevy instead.
Oh, the Silverado?
Yeah. Or its GMC equivalent. I've just heard different things. If you're a fleet manager, you go get the Ford because there's going to be an abundance of parts. But if you're a mechanic, you pick the Chevy because there's less likely to go wrong with it or something like that. So we've actually had a guest on this show who said essentially the same thing, that if he had to buy one, he would get the Chevy instead of the
Ford. The Rams are pretty nice too. The rental car places has given me those a couple times when they didn't have regular cars available. And I got to say, they were comfy and they had everything I needed and a big, gigantic armrest.
See, the armrest is critical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Misty, let's change gears here for a minute and go completely off reservation here. I'm going to look at this recipe that you just shared. Can I share this on my Facebook page?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So we were talking about Taco Bell and the long-lost Taco Bell Mexican pizza, which somehow, in their wisdom, Taco Bell has decided to ruin everything you love about their menu, right?
Right. Totally.
Right. And so the Taco Bell pizza is a longtime favorite. I love the stuff. So thank you very much for sharing this thing with me. I can't wait to make my own. But this reminds me of something you also said online, which is you're going to treat your kids' friends to a Thanksgiving dinner in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Any chance to embarrass the offspring is always welcome. It's kind of what I do. No, my son has a pretty close group of friends from his high school days, and they're all really good kids. And one of his friends is coming over next weekend, and she's like super excited because I was like, okay. She's like, I don't care what you cook. I just want American. So I was like, okay. I could do the whole hamburgers, wings thing stuff, but I was like, you know what? I really want to do like honest to God Tex-Mex. So, you know, we have that. And then the other day I ran up to my son's room to tell him something, and he was talking with two of his other friends. And for some reason he hands his headset to me. I'm like, okay. So I'm talking with his friends and we kind of just roll into this idea. And I was like, why don't y'all just all come over and, you know, we'll do like an American Thanksgiving dinner. So like, you know, like November 27th or something. So that's on like the Saturday after. And so it kind of like steamrolled into there. And I was kind of wondering, you know, I was like, at what point in time do I inform these rather well-educated young European people, because they're all over 18, that mac and cheese is a veg?
It's plant-based. Come on.
Yes, well, absolutely.
If you go to any Southern cafe, soul food or whatever, and you get the meat and two veg, macaroni and cheese is right there in the veg section of that menu. So it's a veg. But it's been really interesting trying to plan this menu out, dealing with different religious beliefs, allergies, texture issues. And I'm going to say it because I was like, you know, I was like, we cannot have Thanksgiving dinner without banana pudding.
That's right.
And then the whole thing about the whole point of this American holiday is just to eat a whole bunch of different golden brown foods and then pass out.
Yeah. And then be in a turkey stupor.
Yes. So, Misty, before you go on, there's something you said earlier on that I kind of wanted to explore a bit. But one of the friends said, oh, I just want to have American. And I had two simultaneous thoughts. One, it's funny that Tex-Mex counts as American since it's half Mex. And
hey, Central America.
All right. Yeah. All right. Cool. That's right.
Yeah.
And then the other part is that isn't American food, it kind of shocks me. And this, you know, again, this is my own American Central, just not getting out enough stupidity here. But is American food really that different from European food? And don't they have restaurants that serve American food over there already anyway?
Yes and no.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of American cuisine, of course, that's based on European cuisine, because at the gist of it, a lot of us are European and we have European ancestry.
Yeah.
But then there's the influence in the United States of, you know, you have the big, huge African influence. You know, as you get further to the West Coast, you have the more of the Asian influence. And then you have the indigenous influence as well, mm-hmm. across, you know. So, but it's simple things, you know. It's like if I go to the movie theater, you know, like a couple of years ago, they started carrying nachos. And I was like, yes. And then you realize that the nacho chips have this, what they call cheese powder on it. So they're kind of more like, they're not just plain corn chips.
Right.
But it's also kind of sweet. It's like the difference between Dutch Chinese food and American Chinese food. Dutch Chinese food tends to be really sweet, and I don't like it because I don't like that whole sweet thing. And like for this Thanksgiving dinner, I'm not doing a turkey. I'm going to do a chicken, but I'm going to do a beer butt chicken. And my son was like, can you please not traumatize my friends? And I was like, it's going to be even better when you see how I have to arrange the legs so it doesn't fall over because it, you know, and you turn it to the side and it looks like the chicken's running. And I'm kind of going, mashed potatoes or sweet potato casserole? Because there is no sweet potato casserole here.
Right. You know, I think, Misty, you're right. When I lived in Europe, one of the things that we didn't have was corn. I mean, mm-hmm. anything corn is American. And I mean, Central American to Canada, corn is anything. I remember when we moved, my parents got restationed down south again, and having cornbread for the first time, I was like, oh, I miss cornbread.
I have such a hard time finding the right grind, because they have the polenta, which is
right.
Italian, but it's a much finer grind. So finding the right grind, Up until about 4 or 5 years ago, I couldn't get the sweet corn. The corn that I could get was really, it was really different. It was really starchy. It was really coarse. And you know, if you're like me and have texture issues, you're like, hang it, please no. Because a lot of it was, and even my husband says that, my husband doesn't like corn. And he's like, oh God, that's pig food.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, just strap a curly tail on me and, you know, call me babe. But it's been in the past 4 years that I can find it in the regular mainstream grocery store. But I get like two ears in a pack, and it literally says on the label, American sugar corn.
Wow.
What we would call sweet corn, just because it's not a thing, especially here in Northern Europe. It's very much like mustard greens. I can't get mustard greens. I can't get turnip greens because that's pig food. And I mean, I got really excited because I found a place where I can actually get good mustard green, honest to God, mustard green seeds. And I'm looking at starting a pot garden, not that kind of pot.
Yeah.
Container garden.
A container garden. Sorry, I was thinking in Dutch, in container garden in my backyard, looking for green tomatoes so I can have the ubiquitous fried green tomatoes. And they're like, what are that? The only thing I can get with any regularity is okra, believe it or not. And I have to go to the Moroccan butcher.
Yeah, it's so weird to me that a continent that is so into offal, and I mean organ meats, right? Offal, is thinking that turnip greens and sweet corn is pig food.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but also, you know, I think America is also very regional. I mean, you know, Misty's telling us a bunch of wonderful Southern food, but Northeast is different. And it has very much European influences with American twists on them.
Yep.
The Midwest, I mean, corn-fed kids out there, it's like, I think also American food is very regional.
Yeah, you're right.
It is. But you also have to realize, though, that Georgia especially, does not have that Nordic and Germanic influence that the Northeast has, the Midwest. West has, you know, Georgia was not settled. Georgia was mainly settled by Irish. And we've had that discussion that my ancestors on my mom's side are buried under one of the runways at Savannah Airport. And there's a plaque on the run. There's two plaques on the runway because the family would not agree to have them moved when they expanded the runway.
Wow.
So it's Irish and it's English, and that's why the Georgian mountain dialect, known as Appalachian, is a lot closer to Queen's English, earlier English. Like in the Midwest, you have like opa, when you drop something, opa. But that's very German, you know, that's very Dutch, Nordic, you know, and Germanic. We just don't have that influence. You know, we don't have that as much of a potato-based as they do in other places. So, but I'm looking at surprising the kids, thinking I kind of want to do the green bean casserole, but I've got someone with an allergy to mold, so mushrooms are out.
Sad. That's very sad.
Yeah, I kind of felt sorry for her because I was like, that means you can't eat the blue cheese. I was like, oh man. Yeah. And on the other hand, I was like, yeah, more for me.
Well, good on you for bringing a Thanksgiving meal to those folks. I think I'm hoping they enjoy every minute of it.
I hope they do too. Although I had to laugh at one of them because trying to be the responsible hostess, I sent out a Google sheet saying, okay, are you coming over? You know, are you going to be here? Are you staying the night? Do you have any allergies? You know, the things you cannot eat. And one of the young men wrote back with, I likely won't be eating very much. And I'm like, I looked at my son. I said, you need to explain to him. He needs to adjust his attitude when coming to eat at a Southern lady's house. There is none of this. I likely won't be eating very much. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Well, cool. How do we steer this back to the world of cars before we wrap our episode? You know, we never.
I was going to say, you need a nice big truck to get all your stuff for Thanksgiving.
That's right.
Thank you for listening to the thing about food.
I'm actually going to cook the chicken on the manifold of my MX-5. I'm lying.
There you go.
It has been done. Mythbusters did it.
Yeah, I mean, it has been done. You know, there's a lot of people I've known that go car camping and they cook using their car. And I'm like, hey, that's
engine heat. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I remember my mom telling me, because I mean, my mom got like really big into the horsey thing, and she would go like horse shows, and there were people that'd be parked with their Jaguars and everything, and they'd pop the trunk and they'd have like a microwave oven that was wired into the Jaguar so they could have their snacks and their tea and whatever while they were doing their horsey thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm like,
so weird. But you know, for me, the one thing about trucks that is, I've never owned a truck. I'm trying to remember if there's ever been a truck. I think my dad had a truck when he was managing a recycling center once. But other than that, I've never had a truck. Because to me, why would you get a truck when you could get an SUV
right.
and keep everything dry and leave it in there? And I mean, during tailgate season, because we have season tickets to Georgia State football, and we leave all our tailgate stuff in the back of the SUV, and we don't take it out until the season's over. So I'm just kind of wondering, tell me why truck is better than an SUV. You can line it and make sure so that things don't get all dirty, and you put the seats down and extend the bed. I mean,
it's easier to get tons of bags of concrete and compost and stuff like that out of the bed of a truck than it is into an SUV. You just go up and over the side instead of through the back, right? There's, I think, more freedom of motility.
That said, I think many truck purchasers really overestimate their needs. And then there's also the style factor. Some just like it. I mean, my dad once, I saw him bring home 4x8 sheets of plywood stacked on a Sunbeam Alpine. Oh, yes. Strapped on. It was kind of diagonally across the car so that his head could still stick up out of the driver's seat. And this is, for those not unfamiliar, the Sunbeam Alpine was a little convertible made in England back in the 60s that he had several of in various condition states of running. But yeah, a lot of people who buy trucks overestimate what they need. And you really can do a lot with a decent SUV. In fact, I've got a little Mazda 3 hatchback that I put amazing loads into.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't believe the stuff we shove in the GL. When we go anywhere, that thing, you can't see out the back rearview mirror. It's packed up to the brim. We've moved some incredible things in that. And how many people need to move a sofa? I mean, that's the only thing that I think an F-150.
I don't even think you need a truck to move a sofa. I mean, here in the Netherlands, we do it on a bicycle. And I'm not even kidding. I mean, it's the bakfietsen, the ones that have like the container thing in the front. I've seen people moving a two-person sofa on one of those.
I once got an antique desk into the back of a Mark IV GTI.
Wow.
We didn't take any of it apart either.
See, and I can put my third row seat down and fit, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people in my GL. I mean, you can't fit 8 people and even a 4.
I have to be honest. I think a lot of it has to do with ego, because SUVs have moved into the realm of this is the wife's car.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, if you're a lawyer or someone who wears a suit to work every day, I don't see you needing a pickup. I don't, especially a pickup with heated seats and surround sound and navigation. To me, a pickup is a working vehicle.
Right.
Exactly. And if you're pulling the fifth wheel, you got to have a truck. You're not going to be, and there's no SUV that can pull a fifth wheeler unless you cut off the back. So, I mean, I see the utility. I'm surprised that so that's the thing. I'm surprised that the F-150 is so high. That's just shocking. I mean, I look at that map and think, wow, that's all of the middle of the country, except for the coast and what was it? Wisconsin or Minnesota. Otherwise, every other state from Idaho to Virginia was the F-150.
And you can't tell me that all of those people are hauling horse feed, dog feed, manure, bales of hay, whatever. You can't tell me. They're hauling flat pack from IKEA. Sorry. I mean, that's it. And you can do that just fine in an SUV. We did it. I've done it numerous times with the CX-5 until somebody stole my CX-5.
Well, I can tell you what, for our wonderful listeners across the country who are listening to us, you're going to be hating us. Because statistically, some of you are driving an F-150 or a Silverado.
I want a truck. I don't know why I want a truck. I mean, there have been times in the past when I have needed it, but you're right. It's like 1% of my driving time I could ever have actually used a truck for something like a sofa or, a load of something for the yard or something. But the rest of the time, it's like I'm content to be in my little sedan. But I don't know why, but it's that I want it when I need it kind of thing. I don't want to have to go to Home Depot to rent their stupid truck to get some stuff home, right? And
I will say that I do hope, as the auto industry, car industry evolves, that it's still an option. My fear is that, when you look at moving to EVs, it's going to be harder and harder to justify some of these larger vehicles. Don't you think, Ben?
Well, not really. Ford's already got an electric F-150 out, and Rivian is about to make a big splash in the market. They're getting pretty close to, well, I mean, they've been advertising for open jobs in the Atlanta area, so they're getting ready to hit the streets.
But what about, I mean, these folks are in rural areas. They don't go in, I guess they'll just charge up at home because there's no charging stations out there. I mean,
the rural folks will think that the electric truck is kind of a weenie wussy thing at first, but then once they've used it, I think they'll be all right.
Okay. So this is where we start to fade out.
Well, I mean, I was sitting here and this idea just popped into my head of a self-powered, what's the English word for it? In Dutch, we call it an aanhangwagen, like a trailer. So it has its own battery and it kind of helps powers itself. So you don't need as big of a car to pull it. So all you need is a tow hitch.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, of course, that idea probably needs more fleshing out, but it was just kind of like one of those, that would work, you know, if it could kind of like help power itself so that you weren't relying totally on the car. And that would help solve some of the problems while still remaining environmentally friendly.
I am serious when I said that's when we were going to start to fade out. So I think that's the end of the episode. So
we can fade out. That's fun.
Bye. See ya. Have a great week.
Have fun.
So we'll end the episode there. This.
Still want to do a proper outro, though.
You can cut out a lot of the art talk about food.
Oh yeah, we can cut that down. I'm not too worried about that.
That was fun.
Yeah. What does the outro need, Ben? You want to do it?
Let me think for a sec.
Yeah.
Make something witty and catchy out of some of that.
We didn't do a trivia question.
We did not.
No, we didn't. Well, let me.
Although the F-150 could have been a trivia question, and Ben got it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ben, you can use my Lotusly devoted to y'all.
Well, folks, if you have any more concerns about what kind of food you're going to haul around in your electric F-150, be sure to let us know. Drop us a line at The Thing About Cars, and we will see you next week. Bye now.
See ya.
Later.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.